Hey, welcome to the Mostly Skateboarding Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Munzenreiter, and I'm joined this week by Patrick Kagongo and Jason from Frozen and Carbonite to talk about brand curation at Vans, but first, Raisa Leal. It was a big week for teenage skate superstar Raisa Leal. The 16-year-old Brazilian saw her dunk colorway sell out, and she was the focus of two videos, skate-heavy Nike SB production and an episode of Thrasher's Out There series. Hey, Patrick. Which of the two videos made more of an impression on you?
Quick correction. Her name is pronounced Haisa, but the anglicization going forward is okay. It happens to the best of us. I only learned about this very recently.
I was ripping on the pronunciation in the Out There video, and then I'm thinking of Carlos Ibiero, because that's how Carlos Ibiero's name is pronounced, apparently.
Yeah.
Not Ribiero, Ibiero.
If anybody speaks Brazilian Portuguese, please feel free to hit us up with the variations in pronunciation. All right. I really like the Out There for a couple of reasons. Number one, we get a window into what it's like to be a teenage superstar. The pressures, how it's changed her family. I mean, her dad was a cleaner, a window cleaner, and her mom was a cashier. Now they're part of her management team. She also has two managers. She's traveling a ton. But clearly, it's wearing on her, and she gives some insight into some of the rumination that's going on in her brain as she is going through contest lines and thinking about her place in an industry that could very well dispose of her next week if it really wanted to, or could merely view her as just, you know, the girl with the fairy wings, Fadinha, as it's known, or her nickname is in Brazilian Portuguese. It means little fairy. And it's kind of amazing to see a young person with that good of a head on their shoulders, because something that really stood out to me about this Out There was the presence of Nyjah Huston. Now, we've had a good laugh at Nyjah's expense many times on this podcast. But what was interesting is that he kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit and gave us some insight to what it was like for him coming up as a child superstar in skateboarding. And he didn't go into too much detail, but it's quite well documented the challenges he had with his father and emancipation and, you know, his dad disappearing with all types of tapes, including a full video part. And one of the challenges for somebody at Haisa's age in an era of social media is that, number one, she's good. She got style. I think she got the best Smith grind out there, back Smith grind out there right now. But also, you know, we're in an Olympics year. And she podiumed at the first Olympics where skateboarding was a competition. There's an insane amount of pressure. Jason, you are also an athlete. You appreciate sports and
yes,
sports
natural
culture.
Athlete.
So I mean, like, what was your take on both the Out There and the Nike part, and also Haisa's discussion of, you know, seeing a sports psychologist?
Yeah, I thought the Out There was super interesting just for the behind the scenes element. The main thing was just like how fucking big time she is. Like, she couldn't even skate barely at her home park without, you know, dozens of people asking for photos and whatnot. And furthermore, I think Patrick noted this in the show notes, just like the dozens of people, or like tons of people at Hollywood High when she was trying to backsmith it. Like, I don't know. I think there's a word for, like, if you have like a bunch of people to follow you around, what is that? Like, your two managers or friends, like people.
Entourage.
She literally has an entourage, which is crazy for someone of her age. But I mean, she does seem to have, you know, a good perspective. Listen, the list of skate child stars is long, and the stories are legend of those who didn't really make it into a long career. But, you know, she seems to have a good head on her shoulders. Seeing a psychologist, I think, is key. So I think seeing a mental health professional is huge. The part was interesting, too. I wanted it to be a full street part. I've been clamoring for a full Raisa street part for a while, but it's pretty much, you know, like Templeton said in our group chat, it's pretty much just a collection of sessions with good tricks and whatnot. I thought the back tail, as well as Mike did, was better than the back tail shove it, because I don't know, for some reason I think popping out clean to regular is harder than shoving out, but that's just me.
Yeah, I vocally responded to the back tail coming out straight. I don't know, a lot of people have gone back tail fakey, but to take it out straight is really cool. Just back to the Out There too, one thing that struck me about her was kind of, and this is, you know, a special a special skill, basically, you know. Dry wit in a second language for a 16-year-old athlete, like, that's pretty cool. It was, like, fun to hang out with her in the mundane things that she's doing as she's trying to skate, as she's doing online school with a teacher back in Brazil, and getting really excited that I didn't look up whatever Brazilian national holiday would have been that, you know, doesn't exist in the US, but she was psyched to have school off. And yeah, like, charming young person for sure. I'm trying to think what else stood out in the part beyond just like super solid skating and my envy of 360 flips by, at least the internet counts her at 4'11". So I'm also wondering what size board she rides. I'm like, 5'7".
What's
on
the
my
wheelbase?
Yeah, maybe what, it's the wheelbase.
For all the wheelbase junkies out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Does she skate the same actual pro model? Like, we need to get her board dimensions. I digress. I don't know. Is she, Patrick, you kind of brought up like the idea of, you know, we already talked about child skate prodigies and how the stories are, you know, of success and not so much success. I think that this kid's got like long-term and stable professional career potential. Like, that seems like the trajectory that she's on right now. What do you think, Patrick?
I think she's got to deliver a few things. She got to give us a couple more legendary contest performances. I think she's got to get gold medal women's in the Olympics to cement her contest side. I think she's won a whole bunch of other things. She's won Street League, a whole bunch of other stuff, right? The Olympics, I think, would cement her as contest skater of all contest skaters. In terms of street, I think that's going to require a move to the U.S. I think she's got to come here. Maybe not to Southern California, to be honest, because that feels cliche. And I think if she really wants to make a huge indentation in skateboarding, she's got to go to someplace else. Another city. I'm not sure where. I mean, I understand that her network's here. She's on April. But imagine her skating through New York.
Is she ready for that?
Is New York ready for that? Picture her at Brooklyn Banks at the rail.
Oh, she'd rip the rail. I mean, one of the kind of like developmental, you know, thoughts that ran through my mind, super sturdy ledge game. You know, Nollie Crooks is rad. The half cab nose slide 270 is rad. Good ledge skater, but it's like kind of rote isn't the word I want. By the numbers is closer to it. Like, you know, can she kind of come into her own as like a skater who has a personality as opposed to, you know, an extremely good contest skater who, you know, you can tell if she does contests.
Just less schoolyards. More actual street spots. No schoolyards. Like, go to New York for a summer. I think that's what she should do when she turns 18. Go to New York and spend a summer in New York and just film and chill and eat dollar slices and listen to the drill and just post up.
I mean, you've also got your manager at the session at the rail. And granted, young person, entourage. I think it's a weird world that I don't think I'm fully comprehending.
I mean, both of you guys are parents, so you have a better window into this than I would. But I mean, developmentally, that must be strange. I mean, when I was a teenager, the eldest of four boys, my big thing was like trying to find time alone. I feel like she's never alone. Like, when does she have time to post up?
Wait, before we continue, what was the deal with like the skate dad at Hollywood, like filming his son with the helmet, trying to board slide?
Board slide, catching the kid.
Yeah, that's a whole scene like I know nothing about. Like, is that a thing out there or what?
Yeah, it is. In Southern California, yeah, you could go to any skate park on a Saturday or a Sunday morning and you will find some parent or parents, you know, coaching their kid. In some cases, I've seen them screaming on their kids, which is absolutely wild.
That's crazy, dude.
I'm not about to intervene because you don't know if mom and dad is holding heat. But in all seriousness, that cannot be good. Like, the reason why we all started skating was to be free and to have fun. And the idea of having one of your parents scream on you. And Haisa's thing is that, you know, her parents are like, this is where like the child star thing, I think, can get really weird, because I hope that her money's being taken care of. I don't know what the laws are like in Brazil. I know in the U.S. that there's, in certain states like California, because of all the stuff that's happened in Hollywood and film and television, there's some pretty strict rules about being able to establish a trust so you don't end up like a Gary Coleman or any number of child actors whose parents just dipped out with the money. But back to that guy with the rail, I low-key wish my dad would do that. And maybe, you know, I wouldn't be terrified of handrails. But at the same time, though, like, that's not how you learn how to skate handrails. I'm sorry.
I wonder if her status as, you know, working part-time in California kind of begets some of that financial, you know, kicks in some of those financial rules.
Yeah, maybe. But back to the skate shit for a while.
Yeah.
I think what kind of, right now, what kind of sets her apart is she has, like, the coolest trick selection of any of her colleagues, like, on the women's side. Like, everything's backside, like, super solid backtails, backsmiths, 360 flips, back lip slides. That's, like, Jason Lee shit. That's, like, the Jason Lee trick selection.
She had the backside nollie. She ollied up that four stair way too easily, which, like, kind of made my old ass a little envious of. And then she did the backside nollie heel. I wish they hadn't of. Yeah. I wish they didn't do the jump cut in there in the Nike edit. Like, let the girl roll and backside nollie heel. But yeah,
little backside nollie heel now and there. But as far as her progression, like, my whole thing or my theory is that skaters peak at around 23 because they still have the legs, but their mind is more developed. Like, they've been skating for a long time, so they can, you know, conceptualize stuff and put shit together that's more interesting.
Right.
So, I mean, like, Carol, when he did Modus, was 23. There's a bunch of other examples out there, too. So, but yeah, I mean, when people, it's weird. You know, sometimes when people are super good at something when they're young, they're, like, over it when they get a little older. Like, you know, for pretty much everyone, people's interests and stuff change as they get older as well. You know, we saw it happen with the Supreme kids to a certain extent.
Stella Reynolds.
Yeah, exactly. Stella Reynolds, like, she was good. And she, you know, sometimes people are just over something. They just move on in life, you know? You never know.
As they should. But, you know, back to, you know, she's not just a world-famous skater. You know, that one little clip of her in Fairy Wings, heel flip in that three set.
Good heel flip, too.
Exceptional heel flip. And it was first try, too. So her mama convinced her to go back and get a couple more attempts so they can, you know, craft a narrative out of it. That shows that the mom was, yo, three-dimensional chess right there.
Mom's not in the video. It's like, you know, who's pulling the strings here?
Is it three-dimensional or four-dimensional?
It's nine.
Yeah, as many dimensions as you can. Like
100,000 million.
surpass space-time. That's the fourth dimension.
But, you know, she's got sponsorships that are probably, you know, they're bringing in ridiculous amounts of money. Most certainly for Brazil and definitely even for the United States. I mean, the fact that she got a Nike that's coming out, was it? Did it come out last weekend or is it coming out this weekend?
I mean, it came out last weekend.
The way they ship things anymore, it's like, maybe it came out, maybe it hasn't hit your shop yet. But yeah, it's out and it's sold out. You know,
There you go. And the thing that, like, blows my mind is that she only has, you can only go up from here. You know, like, let's say she has a growth spurt, you know, there's going to be modeling agencies who'll be like, yo, Haissa, like, come to Paris. You know, Pharrell might come knocking and be like, yo, I want you to be in the fucking my next Louis Vuitton show. Come through.
And it's like, those possible heights are interesting because I didn't know she was from, and I'm going to do my best, you know, Portuguese pronunciation, Imperatriz, Brazil, which is like the metro, it's inland, it's on a river. And it's 500,000 people in the metro area. Like, that's not a major, major city. You know what I mean?
That's tiny for Brazil. My goodness. You know, compared to Sao Paulo or Rio?
I was expecting it to be, you know, like some of those Chinese metropolises where it's like 10 million people. Never heard of this country or never heard of that city. But no, it's a relatively small town on, let's see what river this is. It's so small, I can't even see it. Gosh, bear with me, listeners. The Tocantins. I don't know. I don't know how to do Portuguese, man. I took college Spanish, so all apologies for that.
I mean, you know, she's a small town girl made good. And I guess then, you know, we're all students of skateboard history. Jason, resident world kid, what do you think are some lessons that can be learned from the stories from World in the 90s? What are some things to avoid as a child superstar?
Just, you know, pay your taxes, number one. Just be super cool to people. I mean, in the 90s, it was cool to be a dick to a certain extent. But yeah, just pay your taxes, be cool to people. Just keep skating. Don't get too much into drugs and or alcohol. And that's the big one, I think. Because that whole thing, like the drugs and alcohol, has taken out a whole bunch of coulda, woulda, shouldas.
Yeah. I mean, the tax thing too, to an extent, because although the thing is, you could always, there's always a payment plan. And by the way, I know it's tax season here in the U.S., so beware of those scams. And if you're in one of the 12 to 13 states that is now hosting IRS Direct File, you can now file taxes for free without having to go to a third party. Templeton will link in the show notes. I'm very proud of it because a few of my colleagues worked on it. So shout out to them. Anyway, back to the pitfalls. Mike, what about you? What do you think are some pitfalls to avoid, some things not to do for child superstar, child prodigy, whatever?
Child prodigy. I mean, not to do. Don't quit April, because I feel like the Shane O'Neill comments, you know, that guy's about as droll and dry as it gets, which is fantastic. I love that way of operating, talking about skating in the Hollywood 16. Like, that's dangerous. Like,
wait, how about him talking about like a kid's today obsessed with the Hollywood 16? Like, wait a minute, wasn't this kid, wasn't he just Nugget?
He was Nugget.
He was a Nugget in like a Dodgers cap.
Yo, I interviewed him in 2008 as Nugget. And that was, you know, 16 years ago. I interviewed him for the Skateboard Mag, did his New Jack. So it's been a while with that guy. I think he's got, he was on Skate Mental at the time. So I think he's got the reps. But yeah, man, I mean, just, I think the people around her are going to make a big difference. And it's probably great that, you know, there's a business manager and there's these parents that weren't on the session when she was trying to backsmith a 16 stair. Because I do believe she has some siblings, and you know, it's kind of refreshing that the family wasn't on blast in that video. You know, I mean, maybe they're on blast elsewhere, but on Thrasher they were kind of in the background, and that seems good.
I think the only thing I would say is don't do anything that will potentially harm your immigration status. If you're doing dirt, if things are getting crazy, keep it off social media and just use your head, because one of the worst things that can happen to a young international skater is losing their visa privileges, losing access to come to the US, because it's really hard and insanely expensive post 9/11 to come back from that. I'm talking about, it could be some kind of assault, violence charge. It could be if it's a drug charge, if it's something stupid. I mean, think about how many careers got derailed. Even like Carl Shipman, like his was just overstaying his visa by going to San Francisco. It took him ages. You know, he went to Slam City Jam in Vancouver, tried to come back into the U.S. after, you know, overstaying his visa and living in San Francisco. And they said, no, he got deported back to England. It took ages for him to come back.
That put a real kibosh on the rest of his career.
It did.
If you think about it. But yeah, I mean, I beg to differ with Patrick about moving to New York. I think she has to move to Southern California, because like that's where I think she would have like a good structure with the April House. You know, by the way, I love the BTS at the April House. I would have killed to have a BTS of the H Street House back in the day. But yeah, the April House, April House seems pretty much as clean as you would expect it to be, for sure. But yeah, I think she has to move to Southern California, because that's where like the manufacturer is. Like, she would have a good support system and everything there. I mean, if you want to go to New York for a summer and do that thing, you can do that. If you want to go to Paris or Barcelona, you can do that. The world is like a lot smaller than it used to be in that respect. So if you want to get a film somewhere, it ain't hard, especially with someone with her, you know, with the Nike and all that stuff going on.
Yeah. And I think the pratfalls aren't as easy to fall into, to be as slightly redundant, but you know, Carl Shipman in the late 90s was probably just Carl Shipmaning around town. He was on his own. I think she's got a pretty good team, good sponsors that are going to, you know, do what they can to facilitate ongoing relationships, because, I mean, the kid is friggin' bankable. Like I said, at least, you know, dry wit, good with her fans, damn good skater, only going to get better at 16. I mean, it's worth remembering. The kid is 16. She's young. I mean, there's not, I feel like the, you know, the child skate superstar has kind of gone away in terms of like, we don't look at a bunch of teenagers or kids skaters who like look their age so much. You know, there's not a lot of premium with a lot of brands where, you know, Chris Brand or whomever, Billy Waldman, like there's no novelty there. People don't necessarily want to see kids anymore, but she's transcends that. And so I think people are going to make sure she can be as successful as she can be for as long as possible.
So then the question is, you know, you think about the big homegirl, Leticia Buffoni, who's had a good career and has branched out and has diversified her income streams. And I think she's based here. I met her the day that we went to adopt our cat, young Oliver. He was 8 weeks old at the time. And like Leticia Buffoni, like she paved the way. Like there's no Aissa without Leticia Buffoni. So, you know, I wonder for Aissa, you know, it feels like she's already gotten to places that it took Leticia a few years to get to. Like, what does a great street part look like for her? You know, is it okay if it doesn't come for another couple of years? You know, maybe she does the contest. I could see a world where she does the contest stuff just for now while she's young. And then, you know, 18, 19, it's like, I'm street skating. I'm not doing contests no more. Or a case of just like, I'm going to come back. Like, imagine if she said, I'm retiring from contests. If she won the Olympics, she won gold at the Olympics and says, I'm retiring from contests. That'd be badass. Like, now I'm just street skating.
Yeah, it would be badass, but I mean, if you look at the out there, it seems like she's supporting a whole machine.
Right.
It seems like she's supporting her family plus her two managers and whatnot. So if you have that type of machine, you got to keep it rolling no matter what. It's like KISS or something like that. It's like, well, why don't they just stop? Like, you got all the money in the world. It's like, well, you got a whole operation behind you with people who have jobs and families and what, you know. So I don't know if she'll retire from contest. That would be badass, but like, I don't know if it would ever really happen.
I mean, she's that consistent at winning those things where it would seem folly to like just be like, all right, now I'm not doing this anymore and turning that faucet off. And then beyond that, yeah, I mean,
The old money faucet.
She's that good. You can keep winning it. And, you know, the street part, I'm sure, will come. I think it's just worth remembering, again, like, she's 16. And I enjoyed the street footage, the back tail, not the back tail show. That was super cool. And there was good, solid skating in there. And I would love to see it develop. I don't see, like, turning away from the contest focus. Because I think, despite what Nyjah was saying, she knows the importance of street skating. I'm not sure if street skating is all that as important to her career as it is to skater X, like man or woman. You know, she's made herself famous in that lane, so I don't necessarily see the utility of turning away from it.
I don't know. I love the idea of somebody doing something drastic. You know, the Beatles went from touring in '66. They went out on top before live sound could actually catch up to what they wanted to do. But they said, no, we're just going to focus. We're going to do studio stuff. That's it. Very similarly, what if she said, what more could she win if she wins a gold medal? What, another street league? Some more big purses? But at the same time, you're right, Jason, like the KISS analogy is spot on. It's a machine. There's people who've got jobs. They got lives. You got to keep them employed. At the same time, though, you know, when you're that young, and there's been quite a few articles coming out this week about the effects of social media on young minds and on young people. You know, I again think about being a teenager and being desperate for having time to myself and how difficult that must be for somebody like her to be able to develop interests and do other things without everybody breathing down your neck or feeling this obligation that you have to practice. You got to get your runs in. You got to such and such. But at the same time, though, the thing that's kind of reassuring is that it feels like, at least from watching the interviews and watching her skate, she has agency in this. And she wants to be doing this. If we're going to think about her like this, like you think about like the famous Brazilian footballer, Marta, who I think has scored the most international goals of any footballer, man or woman. And you think about how many kids in Brazil love football and their dream is to go play for one of the big club teams in Brazil or somewhere in Europe and to represent Brazil on the national team. It must be different when it's something you're thinking about from a young age. And she's got plenty of examples. I mean, we're all old enough to remember when the Brazilians were coming. The Brazilians are coming. 95, 96, you know, Bob Burnquist and all them. That first generation of Brazilian pros. And now there's such a high standard of performance and expectation that maybe it's just baked into your experience. You're a Brazilian skater. Of course you want to be the next, you know, the next Thiago. You're not just trying to chill and become a hometown hero. You want to be the biggest thing in the world.
Speaking of pro athletes, maybe she, I don't know what the deal was, but at the April house, she was walking like she was an NBA player in game, like conserving energy. Did anybody else pick up on that?
Yeah.
Like the pro athlete shuffle.
Was the, y'all think like the warehouse is connected to the house or is that like a separate location? I was wondering about
separate
that.
Location. The, yeah. The house has a, has the skate park. And I think Shane O'Neill lived there. That seemed to be my impression based on social media for a little while. And then maybe he turned it over to the team now that he's a, you know, the old head or whatever.
Yeah. Also, California zoning laws can be quite strict, even in the Valley where I'm going to guess that.
Oh, yeah, right. Because it's like residential business, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people are violating that shit all the time. But you're right. I did notice that. Like, I was just like, you know, kind of like moving very deliberately, very slowly. You're right. It's a shuffle. Although I wonder sometimes, too, like football players or soccer players have this, too. Sometimes, like, you know, from your exercises, your practice, that you end up having a different walk. Your gait changes because of the way that you are, the way that you're training. I wonder if that's something that's happening for her.
Yeah. Road Not Traveled, there was a Gencom article with the woman who is the Nike contracted trainer. We will circle back to that.
I could use a personal trainer. I think that'd be awesome for skating. And not just like, oh, I come see this person once a week. Like somebody who trains with you in the morning, has breakfast with you, and then you go skate with them.
Stretch you out.
Yeah.
You get to eat. You get to eat, talk about the news of the day, and then... All right, how about this? Could you use a brand curator?
For the Patrick Ngongo brand? Wow. Say more.
So also this week, fans announced that Atiba Jefferson, perhaps the world's best-known skate photographer, was named Vans's brand curator. Jason, how do you think this move furthers the Waffle Soul Makers brand narrative?
Well, first of all, I can't believe they didn't reach out to me for at least an interview, at least like a token interview. I mean, I'm the brand narrative guy over here. Nah, but seriously, it's kind of a shakeup at Vans. They have a new CEO or some corporate guy in there. On all accounts, earnings have been down a little bit. So I guess they're trying something new. Based on my rudimentary internet research, it seems like they're trying to do a thing where it's like Vans plus a little bit of Louis Vuitton, kind of what Virgil Recipes was doing, plus a little bit of Supreme to make like weird fashion type clothes. But I looked on the website and it's pretty like slightly more fashion, but not crazy expensive or anything. Like it's not like a Louis Vuitton like Prêt-à-Porter or whatever. So it's kind of cool. It seems like a similar type of deal to what Pharrell was doing at a Louis Vuitton or to what Virgil was doing before. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, Vans, I mean, they certainly have the brand equity to do something. But I mean, I don't know if they can create the demand similar to what a Supreme has or even a Louis Vuitton. And, like, not sure what the target market is for this either. So it's kind of like people who would be the Supreme, but a little bit less in demand. I don't know.
Is it, like, almost a move for the slightly more hardcore people? Because, I mean... Atiba has a lot of appeal and he's well known, but it's like still kind of be, you know, an inside skateboarding type fan or am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, it's not really hardcore skate. It's more like type of stuff you would see like in the Supreme shop or store or whatever. Like they have these half cabs with these weird Vibram soles, like jackets with like the checkerboard pattern, but it's like a hypnotic type of thing. So it's not like your usual soft goods you would see at your average skate shop, like your usual like flannel sweatshirts, hoodies, like some type of pants, that type of thing. It's not like skate centric, if that makes sense. However, unless they do have some really dope like Enigma colorway half calves, which are really dope. Those are tough.
So Atiba has the juice. Atiba is a well-respected sports photographer from his time with the Lakers, as well as with, what was it, NBA Inside Stuff magazine. I want to say he was there, if that was a magazine. It was. Okay, yeah, he was there as well. I mean, he's a well-respected photographer, both in skateboarding as well as in mainstream sports, ball sports, and in fashion. And the thing that Vans is missing is the crossover appeal that you see with Adidas Sambas or with dirty Nike Air Force Ones. People who are not plugged into the history or the vibes that come with a certain shoe or a certain shoe brand, rocking those shoes religiously. And I think what Atiba has, because of his connections within fashion and his experience with skateboarding, because skateboarding is the original mainstream late 20th century influencer culture, I think Atiba knows how to look for and maybe exploit some of those connections. I think what Vans needs is what you need, like Rihanna wearing the Thrasher shirt. We need a bunch of young, hip, cool people that Gen Z and young millennials are watching to start rocking Vans. And not just like, oh, I'm just casually wearing my Vans. I'm talking about like, I got that shit on. That the Vans are indispensable to the fit. When you rock dirty Air Force Ones, you're signaling something like, I'm Melrose chic. It doesn't matter where I am in the world. That is my thing. And I think what's particularly difficult is that it's where, like, how do you ingratiate yourself into those scenes? How, like, who do you start sending boxes to, right? It's strategic, right? You have to be strategic about who you're getting close to. And I think it's also working with the designers and the team at Vans and ultimately their parent company, VF, to streamline the vision for Vans. Because I think the problem is that they're running back into what they had in the early aughts. Them big puffy shoes. They're not making big puffy shoes, but they're making a lot of stuff that doesn't look or feel like Vans.
I think the new Ave shoe has like a sock liner or something. Like it's a SLB 97 or some shit.
Yeah, you can't be that. Vans tried that and failed. When they and you know what the thing is? Vans was dragged back to basics by young skaters in LA and Orange County who were reaching for Vans because they were classic and they were affordable. And they looked good with Dickies or whatever type of work pants they were rocking. And that gave them this huge lifeline. And now they've reached the end of that. And they got to do something different. But they can't try what didn't work 20 years ago. Because nobody is even nostalgic for those shoes. People are nostalgic for old DCs. Nobody cares about old puffy Vans.
Like the low cab. It came out with the Logan like the mid-90s. Okay. But yeah, they've never really had success with the cups, you know. So yeah, if they just streamline it and like just come with a bunch of like half calves, maybe even bring back the full cab, just old school, like, you know, eras. That's pretty much it. I don't know. Fashion's weird. It's like a monolith. Like Vans, like about how long was it? Yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago, like everyone was wearing Vans, like old schools or eras. That was like, I think that was when that Damn It Daniel like Vine came out or whatever.
Back
when that thing came out, everyone had Vans, and now it's like it's just like cooked forces everywhere.
Super curious how long that actually would have been ago, because the pandemic has like absolutely warped our sense of time and past time.
If I recall, based on my job, it was right before the pandemic. It was okay. Like 19 into 20.
It's older.
Or maybe even before that.
2016.
I don't even know what video it was, but I had a hunch.
Damn Daniel, back again with the white van.
Oh, that was the Damn Daniel thing was 2016. Yeah.
Yeah.
give it. Yeah, okay,
how do you remember that? That's great. Did you look it up?
I did look it up, but I was like, I also was thinking, I was like, it was well before the pandemic. And it was weird too, because I think those kids are from Inland Empire, Riverside, right? And over there, time has kind of stopped. Like there's some parts of the country where Vans are still wavy. But the thing is, Vans is not wavy in the places that it needs to be wavy. And that's a problem for big corporate Joe and all them upstairs. You know, like the people who are paying attention to the money don't care if you are big in Orange County or Riverside or San Bernardino or wherever. Like they want you big in New York and Paris and London. And how does Vans do that? Because nobody likes a try hard. And like Vans has clout. Like Vans is not like, remember last week we're talking about those weirdo internet shoe brands?
Oh yeah.
Like the stuff that shows up in your Instagram feeds, you're just like, who's paying $300 for a pair of ripoff Stan Smiths?
Oh my God, the worst looking like produced shoes. I don't know. Those the ultra high fashion expensive sneakers that weigh 5 pounds each. Ah. Oh. You go into a Nordstrom's and just lose your mind over those things.
Exactly. And there's some dude at your job right now. If you're still working in person, there's some dude at your job who thinks that when he's got those on, right? with his
barely lift his foot.
Yeah, he's like, yo, I got this shit on, man. He thinks he's wavy. But back to Vans. I mean, bringing it back to skateboarding, because that's what this is all about. What does Vans need to do in skateboarding to change his trajectory? Because they're not washed, but there's pressure from upstairs at VF about performance and sales. What do they got to do?
I mean, from my experience, having purchased like slip-ons recently, they changed the last on the shoe. The shoes fit differently than they used to. They need to just go back to how people expect the shoes to fit. That's the short of it all. Like that's the easiest line.
Yeah, in skating, it's weird because people, you know, like you said, it's the original influencer culture. So people are going to copy whatever the top pros do. And it seems like most of the top pros are either wearing Nikes or Adidas, couple with New Balance. So like it seems like maybe New Balance took the spot that Vans used to have. I don't know.
Still got like a Curran Caples out there and he's looking good. I feel like
good skater. Super good skater.
They've got guys. Like there's an Elijah Burrell part.
Elijah Burrell, yeah. They got
was
Dick
he
Rizzo,
skating Vans,
Gilbert,
right?
Gilbert's the man. But I think they would need to get like a couple, like a little bit of a team shakeup.
What does that look like? Does that mean just giving the axe to a whole bunch of people and saying
I mean getting some, we've talked about this before, getting someone from like the cool guy group.
Who's cool right now? Who's like, oh, excuse me, not who's cool. Who's up and coming? Who is where the Cherry Kids were 10 years ago?
I think everybody wants to know that.
yeah, seriously.
I mean, we can't, if we know, we can't actually say that on this podcast because
we'd have to charge.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Boku dollars.
I mean, that just belies like the difficulty of all this. And it's, you know, best of luck to Atiba Jefferson in brand curation going forward. It's like, this is an art, not a science.
They also have a sizable team.
Yeah, who all is on the team here? Let's see. But like, as far as like a team shakeup, I don't know. Who's like a young gun? That kid Felipe Mota from the Raisa video, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Back heel fakie nose grind. Yeah, that's what he did. That was awesome.
Yeah, well, maybe, haven't seen that one in a minute.
Maybe another thing is, you know, thinking about Brazilian
Rick
kids
Howard
is,
move.
Yeah.
What is that, just like pull one of the principals up from Lakai? I mean, you know, they re-released that Mike Carroll, that short-lived Mike Carroll pro model, and I don't know what kind of agreement had to be made for that. But I don't know. It maybe another alternative is to think about other, you know, emerging skate markets. You know, maybe the answer is not thinking about who's going to be the next Cherry Kids in New York, but looking abroad, looking to international skate scenes and really like strategically sending boxes to certain crews overseas. I mean, yo, Vans, could be hooking up all the Ugandan kids, man. I see Adidas out there. I don't see the kids rocking Vans. I don't see my cousins rocking Vans out there. What y'all doing? You could be big in sub-Saharan Africa. Don't blow it.
Actually, you know what? I retract my previous statement. There are some cool guys on here. I mean, you got Abe. I'm looking at the team right now. I got Abe, Beatrice, Abe Mackey, Dick Rizzo,
Gilbert,
Etienne Gagne, who's like the best. Who else we got here? Pedro Delfino, mm-hmm. Rick McCrank, didn't know that.
Ben Cato?
Yeah, Ben Cato. He's in the cool guy group. So, yeah I mean,
Breezy's on there. You know, for like, there's, yeah, it's just. How do we rejuice the brand? Can the timeline be played backwards and the juice goes back into the citrus fruit?
Is it as simple as getting people who don't skate to buy the shoes, or is it something with like on the skate end of things?
Because they're owned by VF, you got to get people who don't skate to rock the shoes. If this was just a strictly skateboarding question, I'd say, hey, a couple good summer tours. And I don't know if there's any Olympic athletes on this team, but get them some shoes. Gotta get Vans out there. Keep the name in people's mouths and keep them, you know, like I said, strategically send boxes out there. But because they're answering to a higher power that is VF Corporation, they have to find a way to ride the fashion wave. They got to get casuals to be rocking Vans. And not just like, oh, I'm reaching for Vans because they're comfortable, whatever. Like, you want people who are wearing this shit, and when they put those Vans on, they're just like, yo, I'm wavy right now. This is the look. Like if you, you know, if you could get Vans, if you could get Vans to hit in New York for a couple summers, game changer.
You just need that Samba moment. Like I, whatever, there was that Samba article by someone. I'm so bad at being specific. You know, late last year, I had no idea the Sambas were hot whatsoever, because that was like all the nerdy ass soccer players in sixth grade wore Sambas. And then, you know, the homie skated in them because that's his shoe he had. And then, you know, didn't think about Sambas until last year. They need some of that arbitrary hotness. Like, you know, pay off some TikTokers till TikTok is banned by the United States Congress in this country. You know, like, make that happen. And just, yeah, I don't know. This it's a tough game out there. Question as we near the hour point, at least on our recording time. Great brand curators in the history of skateboarding. Who comes to mind? Mike T.
Ooh, Mike T, absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, just that original Plan B logo, don't know where that came from. But yeah, that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, in terms of like overall vision and like in the streets executing that, it's kind of incredible. Because all due respect to, you know, Secondhand Smoke, I love that video, but it is definitely a diverging point from the previous vids. Wait, yeah.
I'd say another dude who deserves some respect in that area is a Jay Strickland with like the bootleg, using the old bigger stuff.
Yep.
That was pretty powerful.
Nadas?
Yeah, with 101.
Unstoppable. 101 was perfect. From beginning to end, 101 was the perfect
company. Yeah, like just like the coolest is the coolest. Like you could not get on the team, the most elite team ever.
But didn't then, like, I'm being kind of just a, you know, devil's advocate, not a Satan advocate here, not a Nadas advocate. Didn't he then go on and do like brand work for Element after that?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, he was doing
yin
things.
And yin and yang.
Hey. You gotta get those checks. Although Nadas was also one of the first people in Southern California, or actually, no, in the state of California, have the Acura NSX when that
drove. That's very sick.
Yeah, that's super sick. I mean, like, there's plenty of examples in skating.
I think part of the exercise, though, is that, like, you say plenty of examples, but we're not coming up with so many specific ones. I think it's kind of an unsung.
I have an example. The Menace team. When Kareem masterminded that whole thing, just like,
oh hell yeah!
It's like, well, gangsta rap is, you know, the shit at the moment. We're gonna fucking market this skate team like a rap group.
Yeah, and they were the coolest. They were it's 30 years of Menace. Like, you look like they were the coolest. They had the best clothes. I wish the Menace video had come out when it was supposed to come out. But I think the fact that you only got a snippet, and the fact that they were huge in Germany. Think about that. Those guys went out and did the big summer European circuit like everybody in skateboard did every summer. You go 2 months, contests, demos, signing sessions, all that. And Menace are the number one selling brand in the biggest market in Europe, in the European Union. Like, think about that. Think about that. That's how cool Menace was.
Titus couldn't keep the boards in stock, baby.
Like, think about that. Like, you could probably put up a statue of the OG Menace team at some, you know, I don't know, like some ledge spot somewhere in Germany, and people would be like, yo, that's hype.
Yo, this is very off topic, but can we just all agree that Pupecki grind is like a total anachronism, and I don't think it's a real thing.
And he didn't invent it.
But even calling it that, like, nobody called it that when Eric Pupecki was a pro skater.
Yeah, true. It was just a backside 180 fakie 5-0.
And it's perfectly fine to call it that. Like, maybe I'm...
Yeah, who started that? It became a thing.
Speaking of Menace, if you want Vans to pop, you need a crew. What's the thing that made DC work? Or gave, you know, DC got their juice back, got their groove back? Philly. And Philly skaters were going out of their way to buy DCs. And then DC was like, we should probably start hooking some of these, you know, these skaters up. There's got to be a crew out there that's got to be rocking Vans and making that part of their look, their vibe. And if the nostalgia cycle, as defined by the author Simon Reynolds in his book Retromania, is about 20, 25 years, and if we're about to return to the big rails, big stairs, Huckam era, Zero style, there's got to be a crew of skaters right now who got some tight jeans on and they need something on their feet. And they need some Vans.
Is because you know you can't wear tight jeans with Dunks.
Nah, hell, unless you're in an 80s thrash band, and then
yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that's a great look, but actually,
or like a new retro thrash band, like Enforced or something.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, I mean, it's like with this like Vans OTW thing that he was spearheading. I mean, pretty much like Patrick said, trying to like ride the fashion wave, get Vans more into that conversation with your like Supreme or even like LV type shit.
Yeah, and maybe it's a group. I mean, pop music is in a very weird place right now. It's not in a particularly healthy place across the board, and there's really nothing coming out that's making people want to jump up and down and wild out and get excited and start making music or playing music, but. I don't know. You got to get some kids out there with them Vans, you know? Cool kids. Like, there's popular kids. Like, a lot of shit is popular right now, but there's very little that's cool. And, you know, we wonder why young people are so upset. There's nothing wavy. There's nothing that makes you feel like I'm a rebel. This shit is cool. This shit is different. Like, wearing a hoodie in 90-degree weather is not rebellion, my friend.
Kids just want to be stoked. Do we agree?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe in some alternate universe, I would be stoked on wearing a hoodie in 90, 100 degree weather.
Wait, there's always that guy that comes to the park in like a beanie and like in the middle of the summer, a beanie and a flannel, like takes the flannel off immediately. Then he's skating in like a no shirt with a beanie. What the hell, dude?
Are we talking like a thick beanie? Or are we thinking like Ian MacKay or Adebisi from Oz, like rolled up tiny joint just sitting on the head?
I don't know, but it's like 100 degrees out skating with like a beanie and like a beater.
These kids are, and yo, by the way, that shit stinks. A hoodie in that type of weather?
Nah, you gotta buy the military, you know, watch cap, wool beanie. They're $10 at your army surplus store. Pretty stoked to buy those.
Yeah.
I would be stoked on some surplus gear. And maybe I'm going to hit the Army and Navy store this weekend, get some cargos, camel cargos for the summer.
All right. We've head faked enough listeners by saying stoked like 15 times in the last couple of minutes, which brings us to the part of the show where we talk about what we're stoked on this week. Patrick, what are you stoked on?
Well, this week I am very stoked on Spitfire Wheels, straight out of San Francisco, California. I've really been enjoying Set in Concrete, which is a collaboration between Vans, we've just been talking about, and Free Skate Magazine. It's a documentary about France's DIY scene. It comes with subtitles, so it's a great way for you to practice your English to French translation. I've been jamming on REM's Fables of the Reconstruction, fantastic album. Do the Peter Buck Challenge if you know what's good for you. Chico Brenes' episode on the Nine Club. Oh my goodness, just the stories. Oh, I'm not going to spoil it. Just listen to it. Have a good laugh. And if you see Mike and Rick, ask them, where's Chico's money? And the epically later Ryan Lay episode, which is edited by homeboy Shane. We'll drop a link to his portfolio in the show notes. And then finally, there's a little pepper edit with Max Palmer, who is just the coolest ever. Jason, what are you stoked on this week?
Stoked on Adventure Trucks out of San Francisco, California. Stoked on a little YouTube series from the comedian Drewski called Coulda Been House. It's a reality show kind of in a vein of all those crazy aughts reality shows, but even more over the top, like ridiculously over the top. Shit's so funny. And stoked on the recent Antonio Durao interview in Gencom. It's pretty rare that you see an interview with a pro skater that has an actual point of view and, you know, some interesting ideas and thoughts about stuff. So that was pretty dope to read. Shout out Ian and those guys. Mike, what are you stoked on this week?
Stoked on The Ends of the World by Peter Brennan. Got it as an audiobook this week. It's from 2017, I want to say, is when it was actually published. But it's about mass extinctions. There's been 5 so far in world history, not human history. But it's really interesting. I love physical science and geology and just the fact that humans can figure all that crazy stuff out. Also stoked on the Anthony Edwards dunk this week that was so vicious against John Collins of the Utah Jazz that the poor man John Collins was put out of the game. And Anthony Edwards is one of his left-handed fingers was like the fingertip was crooked after it. He dislocated it on the guy's face. That was pretty crazy. It was lightly snowing this evening, but it smelled like rain. I'm stoked on that. We might get up like upwards of like 2 feet in the next couple of days in a snowless winter. It's kind of crazy. Stoked on that. And then finally, I got the Quarter Snacks 4 Converse mesh shorts and warm-up jersey kit. And really stoked on how those came out. Good job, Snackman, consulting with cons. You might see me on a boat this summer if I ever post photos of it. So you'll have to check my wife's story to see if I show up on a boat in that kit. But in I might be on Lake Minnetonka in that kit.
Oh, boy.
For now, though, like, we're hunkering down for a blizzard, so it's tight. Yeah. That's it for our show this week. Be sure to check out mostlyskateboarding.net for links and other show notes. Thanks to Templeton, who is off this week, but will be editing this show and curating those show notes. Excuse me. Thanks as always, man. Until next week, you can keep up with us online. Jason, where can the people find you?
On the Twitter, at Carbonite1994. On the Instagram, at FrozenCarbonite. And writing stuff for quartersnacks.com. Patrick, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter under the handle at Colonel K Speaks. You can also find me on Instagram under the handle at Pikagongo, and also doing stuff with the Harold Hunter Foundation. Mike, where can the people find you on Bobby Digital's internet?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky, if anybody ever opens that app, at M Munzenrider. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.